sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
I was really proud of what we had, but according to the analysts, we didn't have the complete solution. And that was kind of an interesting dynamic because, I didn't frankly want to get into the ad business by myself. It's funny because even though Demand-Based Engagio were competitors, we'd also been partners. And we'd done some co-marketing together. And in fact, we actually had 40 customers who used both platforms. And early this year, before the pandemic hit, I had started to have a couple conversations with them where we really realized that if you take what they do and what we do and you put them together, it's the unbeatable platform.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. Now, that was John Miller. John's the CPO at Demandbase, and previously, you may know him as the co-founder at Engagio and Marketo. And in this episode, I talk with John about his journey and about how he went from being a physics major at Harvard to playing a very significant role in creating two large product categories. First, we talk about how as a co-founder at Marketo, he helped transform marketing automation. And then as a founder of Engagio, how he's helped drive the whole account-based marketing phenomenon. We're also going to dig into what John sees will be the next big market opportunity or transformation in marketing and sales. So stick around, you want to check this out. Before we get to John, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you subscribe, we'd certainly appreciate it if you could also give us your feedback about how we're doing in the form of a review. So thank you. All right, let's jump into it with John. John Miller, welcome back to the show.
Hey, glad to be here.
I think it's been almost 4 years since we...
No, seriously?
Since we last had you on the show. Yeah, 4 years. Seems like, unfortunately, it seems like yesterday. Of course, everything sort of got stretched out, I guess, with the pandemic. But I guess it compressed all the time before that. So, gosh, congratulations on the acquisition.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, it's been a whirlwind 2 months since we kind of announced it. I'm really happy with how well things are coming together so far. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. So, we'll keep people in suspense, but if they didn't know what acquisition we're talking about until just a few minutes down the road. So, yeah, you've been at the forefront of sort of creating two categories, significant categories in marketing and sales, marketing automation, account-based marketing or account-based everything, as that was the subject of our last talk. So first question is, how does a physics major from Harvard end up in marketing and sales and then creating these two revolutions?
I think the direct connection to physics really just comes the fact that, marketing is increasingly as much about science as it is about art. And and that's driven by just the massive amounts of data that are available now. And frankly, the increasing number of options of ways that we have to kind of interact with customers and prospects. And so the best marketers today really do balance both sides of that equation. Data for targeting and measurement, as well as creativity for kind of connecting to people's, hearts and minds. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the physics connection into marketing. It's funny, I've just always been passionate about trying to find ways to help companies just market better, using both data and technology.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up, pretty soon out of college, I worked at a company that spun off a marketing tech called Exchange, which that went on to be leading marketing technology of like the mid-90s. I kind of leveraged that experience after business school to land a job at a company called Epiphany, which went on to be probably the leading marketing technology in the internet bubble.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody, they sort of, I remember them as Epiphany.
When they added that dot to the name, that was like a $1 billion increase in the valuation back at the time.
Was it really?
Oh, yeah. Everything was, E dot something or whatever. Pretty crazy. And then we took the dot away after the internet bubble crashed.
So
Epiphany, we sold, I was Epiphany for a little over 7 years, and we sold that in 2005. And that's when Phil Fernandez and I started Marketo. And we really saw that, there was a big need for technologies like what Epiphany was selling, but that software as a service enabled a new way of delivering it to marketers that was much more aligned with how marketers buy stuff.
So Epiphany was on-prem based.
Yeah, exactly. It was like $250,000 minimum to buy the software. And that's not how marketers shop, right? Marketers buy trade shows and AdWords and, print runs and things like that. And so software as a service let us sell powerful software in a way that was much more aligned with how marketers buy stuff. And I think that's really what unlocked the software as a service or the MarTech opportunity.
Right.
It was kind of how we aligned those things.
Well, that was required a change in behavior though on the part of the buyers, right? I mean, so what was sort of the initial reaction among marketing people and when you hit them with Marketo after they've been accustomed to Epiphany and other offerings?
It was exciting. I mean, it was the short answer. I mean, the thing that was a little interesting about it was they had gotten used to being able to buy email from kind of more on a subscription basis because there were tools like MailChimp and stuff like that. And so there was definitely a group of customers that saw what they saw in Marketo was, email on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that, you had that vector, which it wasn't quite as different. I think the other factor you had going on, which is, it's just weird to think about. I mean, what we're talking about is like 2005, 2006.
Sure.
Marketers were really just beginning to do online lead generation. I mean, Google AdWords really only got started in 2002, right? It was a relatively early problem that marketers were generating these leads, but they were finding, that there was this business disconnect of I'm generating leads. People are clicking on my ads and coming to my website, but they're not yet ready to talk to a salesperson. And that kind of gap between when somebody, would become known to you and when they were ready. I think we did a really good job of helping to kind of really promote the need to do lead nurturing. And that was a key thing that also drove Marketo, people buying Marketo, is like there was a very clear business problem that needed solving.
Is to manage that gap between the initial interest and making them sales ready.
Exactly. And then there's a pretty clear ROI on doing that well also.
Huh. Yeah, I've never heard it phrased that way. That's forcing me to think here. that seems like a fairly obvious. Moving into that space, what was happening beforehand in terms of what were your customers saying their experiences? Just sales was calling people too soon and they would just fall off the map altogether. They had no way to keep track of them after the initial sales contact.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. I mean, you generate a lead. And, most companies, the first thing they do is then a salesperson would call them up.
Or not.
And the person would say, why are you calling me? I just wanted to read your white paper. And then the salesperson would market in the system as like, okay, bad lead. And that would sort of be the end of it.
Right.
It sounds funny, but like that was happening all the time. And then tools and like Marketo.
I was going to say, just reinforce that stereotype in the minds of sellers that all marketing leads are bad.
to a degree. I mean, you know, and I mean, obviously, you know, 1 in 50 might be okay. So you they still call them, right?
Mm-hmm,
you
know?
Or you have some hapless SDR do it,
right?
Which is in some ways, you know, even worse. The other thing you had going on at the time is it was a company called Eloqua. And Eloqua had gotten started about 5 years before Marketo did. And so they were pretty early in being out there kind of trying to preach that there's technology to kind of, you know, automate some of these processes. And I think that's the last thing that sort of helped Marketo kind of unlock was that, that especially in kind of Silicon Valley venture-backed tech companies,
mm-hmm.
there was a awareness of the need for technology like what Eloqua had. And when Marketo came along with something that was similar but was more affordable and also easier to use, that was pretty exciting to a bunch of people.
Well, interesting. I mean, sort of phrase it that way is not just about Eloqua, but also about the role Marketo had, is that it's really this category, this marketing automation category, that really enabled this, you know, specialized sales predictable revenue model that we have.
Well, I mean, that's a pretty strong statement. But what I do think is that the model today of sort of marketing generates leads, and marketing takes some responsibility for the revenue funnel,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then ultimately creates these warm leads that they can then pass on to sales. Like that, very much, I think, it was unlocked through the kind of marketing automation technology. I agree with that part.
Yeah. Very interesting. So then after Marketo came Engageo. And so what was sort of the path there? What was the sort of the aha moment about this need for account-based marketing?
Yeah, well, there was both a personal journey and then kind of like the business opportunity journey. You know, on the personal side, after 9 years at Marketo, it's been a great experience. But the company had gotten big enough, it didn't really feel like my baby anymore.
Really?
You know, and so I just was craving, honestly, to go back to to that kind of startup and build something from scratch. So I was kind of like, it's time, let me think about what the right opportunity might be.
What was it about that changed, though? I'm sort of really interested in that. It's because, I think it's a common entrepreneurial struggle is, you know, how do you establish and maintain a culture of that you want to work in?
Well, you know, so you have to remember, I wasn't the CEO of Marketo. I was the, you know, original CMO, and then I ended up focusing more on just demand generation. You know, and so almost by definition, as the company grew, the scope of my role got more specialized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just inevitable.
Right.
You know, unless you're the CEO. And so, you know, as it got more, I mean, there was nothing wrong with it. I enjoyed it. And I spent 9 years, but I was craving, I am a generalist in many ways, and I do like kind of touching lots of different things. And so that return to the early, very broad scope, move very quickly. Like, I just don't know if there's, you know, there's no way to kind of hold on to that forever. You know,
right.
it's just naturally happens as you grow.
Right. So Engageo.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, I want to do something in marketing technology. And there were a couple key trends that I had sort of noticed through my time at Marketo. The first is that there's a limit to how far we could take that traditional demand generation model, you know, where marketing generates leads and hands it to sales.
Mm-hmm. And what was the limit?
Effectively declining marginal returns.
Okay.
You know, if I double the number of webinars I run, I'm not going to double the number of leads I generate.
Right.
You know, and like I could write twice as many blog posts, but that doesn't generate twice as much traffic or leads. And so while it was a really efficient system, it kind of had limits to it. And, you know, even internally at Engage or at Marketo, we found ourselves looking for other engines of growth. And we, like many companies, were turning to more focused outbound efforts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'd started to use the analogy at the time of the traditional model that Marketo had helped develop was like fishing with a net. We didn't, you know, we had our campaigns, we threw them out there, and we didn't care who responded. We just would look in the net to make sure we got enough.
Right.
And then you do the nurturing and all that to sort of pass the good ones to sales. But we, but there was this other motion we'd also started to do, which was more fishing with a spear. Let's go find those big valuable fish and proactively go after them. And that worked also. And yet at the same time, and we were doing it at Marketo, but I saw firsthand how hard it was to do and how the technology that we had didn't totally, you know, meet the needs. And then the other factor trend I would say that was going on was I would say I was starting to see a changing dynamic between how marketing and sales work together. The traditional model is very linear baton.
Right.
Marketing generates it, hands it to SDRs, SDRs, you know, qualify it and hand it to sales. But partly related to this need to do outbound, it was, you know, we were requiring much more kind of synchronized or orchestrated processes, where sales, SDRs and salespeople were sending as many of those first touch emails as marketing was. You know, and we're starting to use tools like Outreach and SalesLoft.
Right.
You know, to send those emails. And so the role of marketing owning email was kind of going away. And the own of marketing owning the front of the funnel only was kind of going away. And at the same time, as these deals got bigger and bigger, there's no way the salesperson was talking to every single person at that account. And marketing was actually playing a bigger role in the opportunity stage, right? Because again, the traditional model, you turn marketing off when the opportunity gets created. And here we were like, no, that well, we should advertise to the people. We could keep advertising that account and make sure we're like nurturing all these relationships for people who aren't directly part of the buying committee, but are still influencers.
Mm-hmm.
So that linear baton handoff was falling apart. And so it was those two key trends. I was like, okay, there's a need for another kind of technology platform. And it's funny, initially I called it narrow funnel marketing, but very, very, very quickly realized that this was basically what people were calling account-based marketing, like these concepts. And so, you know, almost immediately I'm like, okay, this is an account-based marketing technology, an account-based marketing company. And so that was 2015. Engage actually got started on Pi Day. So 3/14/15 or March 14th, 2015. And, you know, I think partly because I, with my Marketo experience, had leaned in hard in ABM, I think that helped put more spotlight on the technology, on the concept.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really see ABM as an idea taking off in 2015. You know, before then, you know, it had sort of been this idea that mostly demand base was out there talking about and pushing. So 5 years of Engageo, we sort of, you know, we're building it out with a very kind of unique point of view.
So what was that?
Oh, well, so, you know, and this gets to the demand base merger, you know, a little bit that we hinted to earlier. You know, traditionally demand base, and I would say as well as Terminus and Sixth Sense, which are the other kind of large ABM players, to a degree Rollworks as well.
Right.
I would say had a primarily advertising-centric approach to ABM. You know, and there's a machine learning behind it. So let's use machine learning to identify the accounts that are going to be most interesting or perhaps in market for our solutions. And then let's advertise to them in a very targeted way to create awareness and drive them to our website. And you know, that's a flavor of ABM, kind of digital ABM.
The top, the front, the sort of the
top
front
of
the funnel, right.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, all these platforms built some stuff for later. You know, maybe you alert the salesperson if one of their accounts hits the website, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you do website personalization. So that when they come to the website, they get a slightly different experience. At Engageo, we had taken with the Marketo background, a much more marketing automation centric approach to building ABM. And that meant first and foremost, solving the pains that I'd had at Marketo trying to do this stuff, which was really a data and integration challenge first off. You know, Marketo and the other marketing automation tools are people-centric systems. You know, literally at the time, you'd log into Marketo and it was called the lead database. You'd make a list of leads of people.
Right.
And similarly, Salesforce has always had this interesting disconnect where leads in Salesforce don't roll up to accounts. They're kind of like an independent object.
Right.
Contacts do, but leads don't.
Right.
And that creates a real challenge if you want to be account-centric, because effectively a bunch of your important data doesn't connect to the account. Like all your Marketo stuff doesn't roll up to the account, all your lead stuff doesn't roll up to the account. Even, and then when you think about things, like just the data that sits in your email and your calendar system,
right?
The emails that are going back and forth with your accounts,
right?
That's all email-based. It doesn't roll up to the account, you know, et cetera. And so when I was at Marketo trying to do this stuff, and I was trying to both target accounts and manage campaigns and measure the results, it was really hard and manual because none of the data connected the way I needed
right.
it to.
Nothing integrated.
So that's what we solved at Engageo first, is really building that integrated, we called it the foundation, your account foundation. Pull all that data together, match it everything to the right account, you know, and then make your Marketo and your Salesforce better, because we're then able to push that account-centric lens back into the existing tools.
Right.
And then on top of that, we built really robust measurement capabilities. So that way you could know if your ABM efforts were working. Because with ABM, it's not about how many leads do I generate. It's, am I engaging with the right people at the right accounts? So you need to measure it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, we built out orchestration and sales
right.
functionality. So that way we could start to actually coordinate these actions between what marketing wants to do and what sales wants to do. Not that linear baton handoff, but kind of that more soccer team passing the ball back and forth. So that's what Engageo had built out, which was really interesting, but we didn't do the ad stuff or the predictive machine learning stuff.
Right, like Sixth Sense does, right?
Or demand-based did.
Or demand-based,
you know,
yeah.
You know, for example. And so I think I was really proud of what we had, but according to the analysts, we didn't have the complete solution. You know, and that was, you know, kind of an interesting dynamic because, you know, I didn't frankly want to get into the, you know, ad business by myself, you know, if you will.
Right.
So, you know, maybe to segue then into the acquisition with Demandbase, you know, it's funny because even though Demandbase and Engageo were competitors, we'd also been partners. And we'd done some co-marketing together. And in fact, we actually had 40 customers who used both platforms. And early this year, before the pandemic hit, I had started to have a couple conversations with them where we really realized that if you take what they do and what we do and you put them together, it's the unbeatable platform because it's sort of the best advertising and machine learning and predictive platform with this, you know, the best kind of data integration and orchestration platform.
Right.
And so we started having kind of formal discussions about, you know, merging the companies, and then the pandemic hit. And it was, you know, honestly, only through sheer force of will from both Gabe Rogal, the Demandbase CEO, and myself, in how much we believed in the value of this merger, that we were able to kind of keep the conversations going through Zoom, you know, and everything else
right.
that was going on, and ultimately get the deal done and announced in June.
Yeah, interesting. So hadn't really thought about the mechanics of actually putting a deal together when it's all done remotely.
Yeah, and it probably wouldn't have happened if Gabe and I hadn't started talking in January and February in person.
Before that, yeah.
You know, but yeah, everything totally shifted online, you know. I mean, we had to do the negotiations that way, get
How,
the board
due diligence.
Virtually, all the diligence done virtually. Yeah, totally. And then, you know,
diligence on a couple acquisitions, that was be really hard not, because I mean, part of that was going and actually seeing what people said when you asked them questions, seeing body language and so on.
Totally.
So,
yeah. I mean, the good news is, you know, Engageo, we were a pretty tight ship. So, I mean,
right.
You know, you're able to do diligence on us and you're not going to find anything goofy.
Right.
And so that certainly helped. The other thing that's been interesting is then the last 2 months, I had to join a new company and assimilate into a company totally virtually. And, you know, if you think back to my life journey, I told you a little bit earlier, I actually haven't started a new job since 1999.
Yeah, because working for somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, you know, because Marketo I started and then Engageo I started. So it'd been over 20 years before I even had to like fit into an existing company. And then in this case, I had to do it entirely over Zoom as well. So that's been interesting.
Yeah, I can somewhat identify. I mean, I've worked for myself for 20 years and sold my podcast was acquired in February, right before the shutdown. And doing the same thing. Yeah, integrating with the team at RingDNA through Zoom.
Yep. Well, but the good news is it works pretty well.
Yeah. It does, surprisingly, yeah. So what's the next revolution for John Miller?
Well, I mean, right now, as I alluded to at the beginning, yeah, we are moving like the wind to bring these platforms together. And you know, we're actually gonna have the first customers live on the integrated solution in September. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, right now you and I are recording this in mid August, so any day
right.
now.
Right.
And then, we think we'll have the integrated GA, you know, the GA of the integrated solution in Q4. So, you know, what's next for me is bring these things together. And then, you know, I really do believe that this will be the dominant, ABM platform. And it's fun when you're in a kind of hot, semi-hot, emerging category with the best solution.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, at least a couple of years of continuing to, you know, build and sell and I think ultimately dominate the ABM category. That's what's next.
All right. Well, let me phrase the question differently then. So in your mind, as you look out and scan sort of the horizon, is you know, what do you see as the big sort of, I don't call them pain points, but opportunities for evolution?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Within B2B marketing and B2B sales?
Well, I think we've just barely begun to scratch that changing nature between marketing and sales that I alluded to earlier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, kind of that move from a baton pass to a soccer team.
Right.
You know, like where there's like so many interesting integrated campaigns you can do when you sort of think about, I want to go after this account. And so I want to get it, open the door by sending a direct mail package, but I want the sales rep to write a customized note that I'm going to insert in the package before it goes.
Mm-hmm.
When the package shows up, I need an SDR to reach out in a personalized way. And I'm at the same time, I'm running a personalized ad campaign with personalized content from marketing, you know, supporting that whole initiative. Like that kind of integrated play is incredibly powerful for doing that kind of spear phishing. But absolutely. Just think about how many moving parts you have to coordinate to kind of make it work.
Is there something that's involved with just, you know, tearing, rethinking marketing and sales and the whole function behind it? I mean, I was talking to someone a while ago and they were saying, well, you know, you look at it as, you know, basically when you combine those two, you've got two functions. You've got acquire and retain.
Yeah,
why don't we align people that way and just forget this whole sales marketing thing? You're either in acquisition or you're in retention.
I mean, it's an interesting thought philosophy. I think my personal belief and experience is that it doesn't really work because of the realities of people. You know, for one hand, you know, a phrase I always like to talk about is, you know, sales is from Mars and marketing is from Venus. You kind of need each other, but you end up thinking about the world very, very differently. People get into marketing versus sales with different backgrounds, different experiences, different skill sets, frankly, different views of the world and different motivations. So the first piece is I just think you just have very different functions doing thinking about the world differently. At Marketo, at one point, we tried to having a single revenue department. We actually hired a chief revenue officer who had 6 direct reports. The head of enterprise sales, the head of mid-market sales, the head of EMEA sales, the head of demand generation, the head of corporate communications, and the head of product marketing. So there was no CMO and no head of sales. It was just this one chief revenue officer. And it didn't work great.
Waiting for the punchline, right?
The lesson learned. I mean, I think you need. It's really important to have, I think, a marketing leader and a sales leader.
Well, it brings up, it's just an interesting challenge because it's at some point something's going to have to change, and it's like, when do we start the change? I think that my impression is that, it's just we have a hard time thinking about it because it's always the way it's been, right? And when we think people have these different personalities, but I think that if you rethink the jobs, people's expectations over time change. And they wouldn't necessarily come in with the same mindsets they do today. It's just going to be this period of transition that has to happen.
Maybe you're thinking about it more visionary way than I am. I guess I'm a little bit more on the, you do have the, let me go back to the soccer team analogy maybe.
Yeah, I'm a huge soccer fan.
Yeah. So. You've got forwards and you've got fullbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And those players have slightly different skill sets, and they kind of play different roles, but they can still operate as a single team, and they pass the ball back and forth.
Exactly.
I think if I used American football, it's an even better analogy, right? Because obviously the wide receivers and the linemen are very different from each other.
Well, the trouble with American football, though, is you have offense and defense.
Totally, right.
The nice thing about soccer is that it plays on both, the same team plays both ways. Yeah.
Yeah, but even just on offense, as I said, linemen and wide receivers, totally different, literally genetics,
Right.
And you kind of need both on a team, but they have to find a way to work together as a team. So I guess I'm not against, a single revenue team per se, if you can find the ways to kind of get everything to work. Like we might move it, that I could imagine moving in that direction over time, but it just needs more process, more technology, a lot of things that kind of don't really exist today. So that's an area of that I'm thinking a lot about kind of as a marketing and sales technology trend, another more opportunity.
Right.
Go ahead. You had a question?
Well, yeah, questions for you. I just want to throw this out there. So one thing I spend a lot of time thinking about is this, sort of this idea of seller productivity. And I talk about productivity in a conventional productivity sense as, dollars of whatever, dollars of output or say rate of output, per unit of investment. And in this case, dollars of revenue generated per hour of actual selling time. And so, how effective are sellers in the interactions with buyers or in person or virtually or whatever? And I was talking to someone recently who's doing some research into this, and I put the case to him. I said, my gut feel is that this unit of productivity, sellers' ability to generate revenue per hour sales time hasn't substantially changed over the last 3 or 4 decades, despite all this increase in technology into business in general, but sales as well. And I was wondering whether we've sort of reached a limit in terms of what our technologies can do to improve that, meaning that what's left and what we're sort of struggling with is how do we just make people better at sort of the human elements of sales, which is really sort of seem like this gating item for us right now. I was wondering how you think about that.
I think it's a really interesting question. Kind of first off, back at Marketo, one of the things that we were sort of proud of the fact was that our sellers actually carried a decent chunk higher quota than your typical SaaS sellers. Our reps usually were, kind of our typical mid-market rep was carrying 1.2 million a year. What I'd say industry average is more like 800 or something for kind of a
even lower reps.
Maybe even lower for a comparably paid rep. And you know, our hypothesis at the time was, look at this amazing revenue engine we built that's powered by our own technology, where our sales reps don't do any prospecting themselves. You know, they are only getting fed this warm supply of steady supply of warm and hot leads. And that's what enables them to be so productive that they carry this high quota. I've come to learn over the years that what Marketo actually had was amazing product market fit. And, you know, that amazing product market fit combined with good sales and marketing execution is what enabled us to have such great sales productivity. And so, you know, that's just a long way of sort of saying, I kind of agree with your premise, right? That, you know, with the exception of companies that have ridiculous product market fit, we have not seen a step function change in sales productivity.
I mean, I don't have an answer for it. I'm just, as I'm asking the question, because I think it's, if you look at productivity in general, the impact of technology on productivity and the economy in general, is it basically peaked after the introduction of email. Whereas through like sort of the 80s and 90s, you know, productivity growth was growing, you know, 3%+ sort of annually. But then after email, it sort of settled into like 1%. And yeah, it makes you just think about, okay, well, we've got out this huge explosion of technology into sales and marketing in the last 5, 10, 15 years. Is, are we using it in the right way in order to really impact productivity? I don't have the answer. I'm not just throwing it out there.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, this gets away from my world, you know, of expertise quite as well. But, you know, it is interesting that you've seen a rise in so many kind of sales enablement tools, you know, in the last few years. I'm talking about like Seismic and HighSpot and, you know, stuff like that. You know, that, you know, because that, you know, people are moving beyond just kind of the, hey, here's what I can do with, you know, better marketing tech, like I've been talking about, you know, to kind of, you know, unlock more of the human side. So yeah, no, I wish I had a little bit more to say besides like, your hypothesis is interesting and I want to noodle on it.
All right. Well, you'll come back. We'll do it again. It won't be 4 years though. So, all right. Well, John, that's been great. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
It's always good to chat with you, and it's been thought provoking.
And if people want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Usually just shoot me over LinkedIn. It works pretty well. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at John Miller.
All right, John, thank you so much.
Cheers.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. As always, I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank my guest, John Miller, for sharing his story with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you could also leave us a rating or a review and let us know how we're doing, well, we'd appreciate that. You can do all that on your phone in less than a minute as soon as this episode is over. So thank you for your help with that. And thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.